This is the Serrano Brothers Podcast.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Serrano Brothers Podcast. We are not doing this regularly enough, Joshua.
Dude, it was nice to take a little time off and just to kind of be. So I'm glad that we, I'm glad we took some time off, but I'm glad to be back at it too, man. So,
right.
Yeah. What's been going on with you?
Oh, it's been pretty busy over here. You'll notice that, like, I'm in my new office, right?
Okay. What's the lowdown with?
I now work for two churches.
Okay.
For a Good Shepherd in Concord, and then now in St. John's in Antioch.
How far away is Antioch from you?
Oh, it's like 20 minutes.
And you had your first Sunday this last Sunday there?
Yeah, I did. We worship at Good Shepherd. Oh, no, here at St. John's, we worship at 9. And then at Good Shepherd, we worship at 10:30.
So you need to, jet right after the first service.
Book it. But I think, yeah, absolutely. I have to book it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there's, no going over on the service for you. Like you got to time it just right.
Yeah, the worship service at St. John's can only take an hour long. So, yeah.
Do you use the same liturgies for each place?
No, we have two different musicians, and they have very different styles. And okay. So here we have a pianist, and over there at Good Shepherd we have a guitarist. And the guitarist is really good at contemporary worship music. So Chris Tomlin and all that kind of stuff. And so we do a lot of that music at Good Shepherd, and we do a lot of stuff out of the ELW at St. John's.
Okay. That's cool.
But we still use gathering, word, meal, sending, right? Like the four major parts of the worship service.
That's so cool. Right on.
It is cool. And it's interesting how I got started, this whole thing, right? So St. John's, the previous pastor left, and Pastor Manda, who was working at the synod at the time, was giving them and laying out their options because they realized that they couldn't afford a full-time person. And so she laid out the options to the church council. And then probably about a week or so later, I get a phone call from my parishioner saying, "Hey, I heard you're going to be the new pastor at St. John's."
That's funny.
And I was like, "What are you talking about? I have not taken a call to St. John's. Let me call the synod office." So I called the synod office, I talked to Amanda, and I was like, "Hey, Amanda, did you tell him I was going to be the new pastor over there?" And she said, "Absolutely not." I gave them a bunch of options, and one of them was sharing the pastor. And I was like, "Oh, okay. So this parishioner just kind of grabbed onto that. And then as I was talking about it with my parishioner and kind of telling this story about how funny it was to the church council, we all kind of realized, hey, there might be something here. There might be an opportunity for us, right? Good Shepherd, they could probably afford me for 3 to 5 years, no problem, And then after that time, we would have to really, start making moves. And so we thought, well, what if we went into this early when we didn't have to, when we weren't on our heels, but we could start thinking about it strategically. Mm-hmm. And so we reached out to the president of St. John's, and we said, "Hey, would you all even be interested in doing this?" And then we had a bunch of conversations, and back and forth on what it could mean and what it would look like, and, you know, kind of feeling each other out to see where each other was with all this. And then we decided, and I put together a proposal. And as a part of that proposal, you know, we agreed that both churches were going to vote on it. And it ended up being a unanimous vote from both churches. And the way that it's really working is that I am the full-time called pastor to Good Shepherd. And I am being contracted out to St. John's for 20 hours a week.
So you're being like subletted out.
I'm being rented out. That's exactly correct. Right. And basically what that means is Monday, Tuesday, I'm at Good Shepherd. Thursday, Friday, I am at St. John's. And then I am at both churches on Sunday. But then, here's the deal with it. The deal is like, I'm not working retail, right? So if I'm over here at St. John's and there's an emergency or a phone call from Good Shepherd, I can take that phone call because I'm still doing like the ministry, right? So, totally. So there are days when, you know, I'm working at Good Shepherd and I have to get some stuff done because, you know, Sunday comes every single week, you know, earlier in the week for the worship service at St. John. So,
yeah. It's like a 2-point parish deal. Like, you're right. It's, you know, the understanding is that you're doing work. You know, I think it's really cool that you're spending like office hours there. I think that's a great idea.
Well, you know, it is office hours, but it's also like, so like at Good Shepherd, I do visiting, right? Like, and so I'm away from the office during that, but it's on Monday and Tuesday. I don't really know the community here yet. I don't really have a list of people I need to visit. And so, so I'm spending a lot of time in the office.
Right on, man. Right on. That sounds like fun.
You know what? It is fun. And I think, man, I think this is the way churches are going to have to go for a while, especially here in the Bay Area. There's something like 50 open churches, and most of them, 99% of them, cannot afford full-time calls. And so churches have to start getting together and figuring this out, because no pastor is going to want to work at one place half time and then have some kind of, you know, unless they already have another
job of some sort. Right.
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 I mean, there are certain people who are chaplains and then they work for the church, or like Sarah Wilson, Pastor Sarah Wilson works for the seminary and then she has a part-time call up in Lincoln.
Totally.
You know, and that's good. But for people who only want to be parish pastors and you know, we're going to have to put churches together.
Yeah. I agree with you. I agree.
Yeah. What are you going up to?
Hey, so after Synod Assembly, when was our Synod Assembly? September? No. I got approached by the vice president, and he said, hey, we really need a member on council from your conference. Would you be interested and willing to do it, you know, for have the council appoint you? And
very nice.
And I had thought about running, but then I was like, you know, the kids are young, you know, had other things going on. I don't really want to run for it. And so it just was vacant. So, but when Simon approached me, I was like, oh, okay. Like I can do that. I'll do this. You know, sometimes
so
when you get asked to do
so
something, so far I've been to one council meeting by Zoom, and that's, you know, a couple hours. And then the next thing I've done is we did which was really, I think, kind of wise of the synod, is to get everybody together for like a council retreat. And that was really just like getting to know each other and like spending time in each other's presences, you know, cause I'm pretty sure, I don't know yet, but I think council meets, you know, often by Zoom. And I know they do get together in person, but I think that a lot of it's going to be through Zoom. And so I think it's important, right? You got to be in the same presence as people to get to know them a little bit, because then it's not just a person on screen and you've already developed relationships with them a little bit. So I think that was a really good thing. In fact, we went to that retreat center in San Damiano. And can you believe in the 12 years I've been here, I have never been to San Damiano? Really? Like, yeah, I just never been there. And I was like, oh, this place is beautiful. You know, it's a lovely like retreat center. So that was like, you know, that's been really nice to be able to get to know people and from across the synod. And, you know, there were some business sessions and stuff, but I don't, you know, it's kind of, it all blurs together. So I couldn't tell you off the top of my head kind of what business items were taken care of. But, you know, like a normal church council meeting, you're talking financials, you're talking ministry, you're talking what's capacity of people, and, you know, like what, you know, it's just on a bigger scale, right? And so it's been cool. And this is my first time. I've never been on Synod. Have you ever done Synod Council before?
No, I haven't been on it.
Yeah. So this is my first time doing it, and I'm kind of looking forward to see how it shapes up, you know.
Interesting.
I think it felt kind of natural to be there, and so that's like, besides Synod Council, you know, not a lot. I mean, you know, the church year's almost over, and I'm kind of looking at my calendar going, like, you know, like, what's going to happen? So, you know, I think it's good to, like, I don't know about you, but, like, with the election just happening.
Well, right? Are we going to talk about it?
Well, we are, but I want to say this. Like, I think it's good to have something to look forward to. You know, and you and I in next July, we're going to go do a jiu-jitsu retreat together, right?
Yes, we are.
It's in like Mendocino County, and there it's like a beautiful retreat ground, and we do like jiu-jitsu twice a day, and then there's these beautiful like 4-star chefs who come in, and not beautiful physically, but the food is beautiful is what I'm trying to say.
They're probably beautiful too.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that, you know, like, so those are the kind of things I'm looking forward to right now, you know, for Thanksgiving.
Next month, I'm going to, Hawaii.
Oh, that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. I'm celebrating, 24 years.
Of what?
Of my anniversary, of being married to my wife. It's going to be, great.
So, I cannot believe it's been 24 years, Jeremy.
I know. I know.
Is this the year that you've been together longer than you've been single? Or was that?
No, that happened at 19, because we got married when we were 19.
Okay. Oh, yeah. So you've been.
All right. Year 20, I should say.
Right. I cannot believe you've been married 24 years. That's crazy.
That's wild.
You're old. You're really old.
But then we got Thanksgiving right after that, and we'll be in Orange County with my daughter. So, yeah.
That's nice.
So have Thanksgiving, especially with the election, right? How do you deal with kind of our family members who have a radically different perspective than you do around the election? And I ask because there is, I hear two things, especially online. One of them is like people posting and saying, well, I can still be friends with the people who vote against me, right? And then you have other people who are posting and they're like, if you disagree with me, unfriend me.
Right. So I hold these things in tension, right? Because I think that we should be able to reach across and talk with people, right? And but there are certain policies that I think that the new administration might try to enact that could actively harm my transgender child.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. So I have a little bit, I feel like I have a little bit more kind of concern, you know, around that stuff. But in terms of talking with people, like what I, and like just engaging people in conversation, like I have to remember that, like, I sort of have to detach myself from all the feelings I have around it. Mm-hmm. And make a, and like listen to what is important to them, you know, and kind of try to draw out what is important to them. Right. And then maybe show some inconsistencies and maybe listen for my own inconsistencies. Right. 'Cause I think we get really tribal. I think we get really tribal. And then it's like everything they do is wrong and everything. And they perceive everything that I believe is wrong. You know what I mean? When I don't think that's true with most people. You know, I don't think most people fundamentally will disagree about everything. I got this guy who's he's conservative. I love the guy so much. My jiu-jitsu class, him and I'll chat every once in a while. And he's conservative. He's, you know, and I'm pretty sure he's a Trump guy, you know, but the great thing about him though, is like, he listens. Like I don't feel like he's not listening to me. I don't feel like when I'm talking with him, he's just waiting to talk back. I don't feel like when I'm talking that when I'm trying to make a point that he does the, well, what about this? You know what I mean? Remember, there's always that, right? Like, what about so and so? And instead of answering the question directly, it's like you're trying to point out my inconsistency, so I'm going to point out your inconsistency. And so it shouldn't matter that we're all inconsistent, because I feel like that's the end of it, right? Like, well, you're inconsistent too, so who cares? Like, it and for me, I feel like what we really have to do is like think about, what do we value? What is it that we can do together better than we can do apart, right? I think the idea of what freedom is going to be very important in the next 4 years, because I think we have very, I think we have different ideas of what freedom is. And that plays out differently in different situations. And it's applied differently to different situations.
Yep. What you're saying is it has a lot about nuance, and we don't do nuance very well right now.
Yeah, I don't think we do nuance very well, and I think we do a lot of stuff from like, and I think both sides does this, like just a lot of gut reaction emoting,
right?
You know,
right?
And rather than kind of really looking for what do people value and how can we enact those values? You know, like I find it very inconsistent that the religious right has backed Donald Trump. Like, because we used to believe in this country that character mattered, that mm-hmm. in order to hold office, you would want to trust someone to do to do what you would have them do. And they kind of had to match your own values, right? And so and I see a very inconsistent through line on the right, you know, that where they don't, sorry about that, where it's like I feel like they've totally given up on that. And in order to have a better economy, which means getting rid of immigrants and also protecting fetuses, You know what I mean? Because they value protecting fetuses. So they know that he will do that. And regardless if he sleeps with porn stars or all the other stuff that, you know, convicted, all the things, right?
Right, right.
You know, and it's, and so we, like, my current question when I'm talking with people and trying to understand what's going on with them is, what is it, how could you vote in that way? How can you trust somebody like that, you mm-hmm. know, to do what you really want them to do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I guess it's in terms of talking with people, let's get back to the subject. In terms of talking with people, I'm trying to listen, trying to ask pointed questions, right? Like, and I think it really takes refining a question well.
And not just gotcha questions, though. Not just I think actually when Jesus tells us to love our enemies, that when we love people, we actually try to really seek to understand them. And so really understanding why they are voting the way that they are, even if and with policies like that may even hurt your child. Like, why is this person voting for something that may hurt my child? But I think you're right. You have to be a little bit distanced from that and be able to differentiate in order to seek deeper understanding. And I think that that's loving your enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, we see opposite sides of the aisles truly see each other as each other's enemies. And the only way for us to move forward, I think, is true love, which means that we have to understand and not just put on the other side whatever we think they are.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think it reminds me of when my kids were younger, much younger. I remember one was saying, well, this so-and-so, this person, he or she's my enemy, you know, and, you know, was just talking about that. And I said, you know what the best way of getting rid of your enemy is? And
what?
And the kid rolled their eyes and said, I know, Dad, to make them my friends. And it's a famous quote that I would always tell them, you know,
right.
I think it's Abraham Lincoln. And I think that's partially a thing, right? Is
absolutely,
we have to listen to people and we have to be able to disagree with them. I'm not a big fan of casting out. I think people are too complicated for that. I think we are all contain multitudes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's as simple as one side or another. But that's so, like, that kind of understanding people as complex, multi-layered folks, and that's hard work. You know, it's easier to just write somebody off because they believe one thing, right? It's so easy.
Or they're not a part of your tribe.
Exactly. It's easy to write people off, you know?
Right.
And I see people on the left and the right do that constantly. And I feel like I'm part of both worlds because my experience of, like, the jujitsu community, they're pretty conservative. You know?
Yeah.
And some of them have, you know, not all of them, obviously. I'm not trying to bait with the people who post, you know, but, you know, they got some, there's some toxic ideas about what masculinity is, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not, by no means am I saying that's everyone. I'm just saying the people who post, that's, I see a lot of it, you know, but I see it on the left as well. you know. And that's also, I find that also to be very difficult. So.
Yeah. And I have no doubt some people are going to hear you saying this and are going, oh, well, you're just milquetoast in the middle, lukewarm. Like, but I don't think that's who you are at all. Like, you have deep convictions about things. And absolutely. At the same time, you're willing to truly try to understand somebody who has made themselves your enemy.
Right. Right. Absolutely. You know, I don't know. Part of that feels like I'm not a conflict avoider.
Yeah, right? Neither am I. I run into conflict.
I'm not a conflict avoider. And I also don't get, I also have pretty thick skin. So I can hear things that make me go, you know, and be like, okay, mm-hmm. I'm detach myself from that. You know, mm-hmm. let's try to get past the reactions. Right. And I feel like that's the mature thing to do is when people want to hit you with gotcha questions, pause. You know who I think is masterful at this? Mm. Pete Buttigieg. I think
Pete's the president, 2028. I'm calling it now.
Holy God, that guy is so good at like showing up on like Fox News and them trying to get a gotcha question and him just take it and kind of reformulate it and go, no, that's, you know, or, you know, he's just so good at like, he doesn't freeze. Judge
who's a committed Christian.
Yes.
You know.
His spirituality is on point in the way he professes, you know, who Jesus is, how he lives that out in the world. I'm like, I'm Team Pete, you know. Yeah. How do you, anything you would add to that? How you would deal with people you disagree with?
I think we have to, I think just embody Ted Lasso, like truly trying to understand people, giving people the benefit of the doubt in things. And like even with like legislation, I mean, the big one right now is pro, you know, pro-life, right? Like, what do people actually believe? You know what I mean? About this, right? Because to me, I got to tell you, pro-life is completely understandable to me if somebody really believes that in the womb there is a child and that child is being murdered. If that's the framing of it, I get pro-life, right? What I don't get in that framing is why those people aren't constantly burning down abortion clinics. Because if there was truly a murder factory that was happening, like, and they really, really believed that, like, can you imagine if there was a place where you took a 15-year-old and killed them and they killed 30 15-year-olds a day? You would be morally obligated
to do something. Right.
Get rid of that place.
Right.
So I understand the position. I understand the pro-life position. I don't understand why that position doesn't lead them to more action.
Right.
Which makes me question what they actually believe.
I think that's fair. Right.
You know, Yeah.
Sure. We'll touch on heavy stuff here.
I don't know if we go through a lot. I think this is a good one for us to come back on.
They were just going to give each other updates, you know, what was going on. Right. Well, I'm interested to see how Sunday goes. Just with post-election.
Yeah, what are you going
to
do with it?
Bishop David Nagler wrote a great letter. And I'm actually going to read some of it. So, because I think we have to remember that, like, the ELCA is not as progressive as we think it is. And as we'd like to believe. And it is a very purple denomination.
Mm-hmm.
And We all receive one body of Christ. And we are one body. So I think we have to remember that. So, yeah, I mean, could you imagine, like, us denying people communion because they didn't vote the way we wanted to vote? Like, that'd be terrible, you know? But that's kind of... I'm not saying anybody's done that, but, like, just, you know, to hold that in your heart. I don't want to do that. So, right. I think it's a good reminder. I mean, now that Donald Trump's going to be the president, like, our destinies are woven together. And so, you know, I think it's incumbent on us to pray for him.
Indeed.
That he makes just decisions, right? That would benefit people, and especially those who are disenfranchised, those who are, the lowly, the weak, the suffering.
And here is where my faith is. Scripture tells us of leader after leader whose heart it turns towards God, no matter how terrible they were, right? Turn the heart of Nebuchadnezzar, right? That's the one that just comes to mind, right? With Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, right? I have faith that God can use anyone in order to continue the long arc of justice in the world. And I have faith that that's possible. And so that's what I'm going to pray for.
Right. Right. I mean, do I wish the other person was elected? Abso-freaking-lutely.
100%.
But we are where we are now. And I think we have to just live in that moment and create communities of care and love and preach the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Right. Because I think that the way, as a pastor, I think it's good that we change policies. It's good that we change the direction of the secular society. But my goal is to transform people's hearts to Jesus. And I think that that's the way the world actually gets changed, is by knowing and being in relationship to Christ. And the more we do that, the more the world changes.
I love it. All right, we've been talking for about 30 minutes.
I think that's a good place for us to end.
Yeah, it's good seeing you, bro.
All right, this has been the Serrano Brother Podcast. Thanks for listening.